world's becoming a dangerous place for us women. Lipstick Bodyguard looks just like an innocent little lipstick, but it'll instantly drop any attacker to his knees so you can get away unharmed. Lipstick Bodyguard, fear no evil. Get yours today, only at lipstickbodyguard.com.
What kind of procrastinator are you? This week on Parents Are Hard to Raise, Diane shows us how to avoid tackling the tough issues that sometimes face us as children of aging parents. Plus, this week's survival tip is child's play.
Welcome to Parents Are Hard to Raise, helping families grow older together without losing their minds. I'm elder care expert Diane Berardi. I was with a family this week whose mom was in a rehab because she had a heart condition and had developed pneumonia. So between the hospital and the rehab, she had been away from home for about 40 days all total. And she wanted to come home. And the family wanted her to continue in rehab to get stronger, but she was weak and tired, and she wanted to come home. So they did bring her home, and I had visited them. I had advised them to get home care through Medex Home Care, who you hear me talk about, and they did. And the family, it was such a great thing to see. It was a very close-knit family. All her children were there, and her sister, her husband, of course. And, you know, they were all eating together and spent time with her. But, you could see that she was tired. She was weak. And she lasted at home just one day. And, you know, when I had talked to her children afterwards, they were so upset and they were so guilty, and they said, oh my gosh, we should have brought her home sooner. We thought we'd have more time with her. We just didn't realize. And, you know, I said to them, you did what you thought was right. You listened to the doctors, the social workers, you got information, and you decided as a family, you know, what to do. We don't know from one minute to the next. Even those of us whose life work is to help people make these decisions, we can't know exactly, you know, what's going to happen or the best course for people. We're dealing with life where things happen in a flash, you know, and change is constant. So there's no training for this part of life we're in. We're taking care of our parents, we're making decisions for them, or we're helping them make decisions. And the one thing I want to impress upon you is, as long as your heart is in it, as long as you try and you're doing what you think is best at this moment in time, no decision is wrong. You do the best you can with what you know, you ask for help, you try to take action. Sometimes you can't make a decision. Sometimes any decision you make, mom and dad aren't happy with, or they won't let you make a decision. Sometimes there's no good choice. There's a lot of what we struggle with, I think, is that, you know, we're taught as children not to be selfish, always put others first. And I try to put my parents first. You know, I am always thinking, okay, what's the best thing for them? And, you know, that's okay in some situations, but what sometimes happens is we worry or we second guess every piece of advice we give them or every decision we make for them or try helping them make. And if we do that and we constantly worry or we look back and we say, I should have done this or I should have done that, we're going to get ourselves sick. And you can't do that. You know, they thought, oh my gosh, you know, if we would have brought her home sooner. There's so many things that can run, so many scenarios that run through your mind, but you can't. Think of all the decisions you've made in your life. Some are good, some are bad, but you'd never set out to make a bad decision. You did the best you could with what the information you had. And that's what you have to realize. I mean, if we could stop our parents from aging, that would be great, but we can't. So when you find yourself feeling guilty and overwhelmed, and believe me, I find that I feel guilty. I feel overwhelmed. So, and I know my brother and sister do for different reasons. My brother and sister are not in the same state as my parents. I am, but I have a busy schedule. I'm about an hour and a half away from them. So all three of us feel guilty in a different way. And sometimes we feel overwhelmed. I always try to call them and involve them, you know, and what's, of course they know what's happening and any decisions that we're trying to make, but you know, you have to kind of step back and say, you know, I can't control everything. I can't control every situation. I can't control every decision. And I'm doing the best I can. And I'm doing a good job because you are. You may not think you are, but you are. Sometimes we know we have to deal with the situation. We have to make a decision. But we procrastinate. We all do it, or we've all done it. At some point in our lives, we've all done it with some decision. And I have, you know, children whose parents need help, or they realize they're not sure what to do. And I have people calling me every day and asking about, you know, rehab or hospitals or daycare or what to do in this situation or home care. And most of the time they haven't approached their parents yet about what they're thinking, or they have and their parents have, you know, said, forget it, you know, yelled at them, or, you know, there's so many things that happen at this stage in their parents' lives. So I can tell, you know, when I'm talking to them and I try to offer, you know, different solutions, because not one solution may work. And sometimes I know that they're just going to let that rest for a while. They may not be approaching their parents at this particular time, and sometimes they will. And the reason we, you know, procrastinate, it's at our core. It's strongly linked to our emotions. Our limbic system is the system that acts as our brain's emotional center. It controls our emotions. And it primes us to feel first. It primes us to feel before we think. And we want to feel good. We want to feel positive. So we want to avoid negative feelings. So we sometimes keep away from tasks or decisions that are going to overwhelm us. We don't realize that when we procrastinate, that we lose 218 minutes a day. We lose more than 3 hours every single day, about 55 days a year. So that's almost 2 months are lost out of every year. So when we have to do something we don't enjoy or we don't want to do, you know, when we know it's going to bring negative feelings or emotional turnover, we look for ways to distract ourselves. And this applies to us having to talk to our parents about certain things. You know, you see they have to go to the doctor. They don't want to go. They need help at home. They don't want to do that. They're home and they're not doing anything. They're not communicating with anyone. You want to get them out. You want to, you know, get them involved in daycare, get them to volunteer, get them to see their friends. They shouldn't be driving. How do we approach that? So we have to realize that the procrastination we feel, it's linked to our emotions. So if we understand that, we have to kind of try to break free of that somehow to make decisions. And there's different kinds of personalities. There's different kinds of procrastinators. Number one is the perfectionist. So everything has to be perfect, including themselves. So because of this, they're afraid to show any imperfection. So maybe they research all these things, or they start all these things, but they just never finish because nothing is ever going to be perfect. They're always, you know, let's say they're writing a letter. They're always making changes. They're editing it. They're always fixing it. So they're never going to finish. And this is a tough one for perfectionists, because perfection is never realized, but it's one form of procrastination. And I can attest to that because I'm like that. I just, you know, I try not to be, but, you know, you want everything to be perfect, every situation. And, you know, if something goes wrong, you're like, wait a minute, what happened? You know, why is that? All right, what was that? You know, and I'm telling you, we have to realize we can't control everything. The second type of procrastinator is the dreamer. So they don't want to have to deal with real life because then that causes stress, challenges, negative situations. So that person feels that they've achieved everything because they have big plans. They're always saying, let's do this, let's do that. But then they never say how they're going to do that. The avoider. If we don't do anything, nothing bad will happen. That kind of, I guess I could kind of be like that too sometimes. My dad is like that. He'll just, you know, decide not to decide. So, and because we're fearful of making mistakes and doing something wrong, we don't do anything because then we're not going to make a mistake. We're not going to do anything wrong. And what happens there is, of course, then we make no decisions, and we need to make decisions in our lives. Then there's the crisis maker, because they don't do anything until that deadline is right there. And some people wait for things to happen, and you don't mean to when it's your parents, but, you know, I'll have people, you know, call and say, oh, my, you know, maybe my dad keeps falling. And I'll say, well, he needs to see a doctor, you know, or, you know, maybe he's seen a doctor. He shouldn't be alone. Well, he needs, you know, help in the home. He shouldn't be alone. And they're afraid to approach their dad with that because they know how their dad is going to react. So they kind of do nothing and then wait for something to happen before they can make a decision. And then there's the busy procrastinator, because they're always busy, and they are always busy, and they're always doing things, but they're doing things that they think they should be doing, not what they really need to do. So they delay what's really important. So what do we do? Well, if we know procrastination is tied to our emotions, we have to try to regulate our emotions. We know that our obligations, you know, our obligations to our parents are the love we feel for our parents, but the task we have to approach them on is difficult. We're dreading it. So it kind of causes us to panic. We know it's going to be difficult. We know there's going to be yelling and saying, no, no, we're not going to do it. So we avoid it. And we avoid it to keep from experiencing that negativity. So when we have that difficult task, when we have to approach them, you know, I always say to people, start small. If you know, unless it's, of course, an emergency situation where someone, you know, has to have something, you know, drastic happen. But if it's something that you're just starting to approach, you're starting to see, you know, that your parents maybe need help, or maybe you have, they're just lonely. They're not talking to anyone. They're not dealing with their friends anymore. Start small. I always tell them, just, you know, if you start small in little pieces, you break up the big problem. It's not so difficult, and you focus on one task at a time. Take that first step. So, you know, if you have to talk to mom and dad about maybe getting care in the home, or maybe going to adult daycare, you want to get them out, or you want to get them to try to volunteer something, start out with a few hours a day or one day a week. Start out small and let them be exposed to that. Let them get a feel for that. And after the first time, you know, it's not going to be the perfect situation. It's not going to be the perfect marriage. They may say, I didn't like that at all, even though they might have warmed up to it a tiny, tiny bit. It may take a few weeks of starting out small. But if you do that and start out small, it's not so monumental. And you might, and because you maybe will get a positive reaction from your parent about doing that, it may take a few months, then you might feel better yourself. And when you feel better, you can get on, move on to the next step. And when we come back from the break, I want to talk about embracing solitude.
I want to tell you about my friend Katie. Katie is a nurse, and she was attacked on her way home from work. She was totally taken by surprise, and although Katie is only 5 feet tall and 106 pounds, she was easily able to drop her 6'4", 250-pound attacker to his knees and get away unharmed. Katie wasn't just lucky that day. She was prepared. In her pocketbook, a harmless-looking lipstick, which really contained a powerful man-stopping aerosol propellant. It's not like it was in our grandmother's day. Today, just going to and from work or to the mall can have tragic consequences. The FBI says a violent crime is committed every 15 seconds in the United States, and a forcible rape happens every 5 minutes. And chances are, when something happens, no one will be around to help. It looks just like a lipstick, so no one will suspect a thing, which is important since experts say getting the jump on your attacker is all about the element of surprise. Inside this innocent-looking lipstick is the same powerful stuff used by police and the military to disarm even the most powerful armed aggressor. In fact, National Park Rangers use the very same formula that's inside this little lipstick to stop 2,000-pound vicious grizzly bears dead in their tracks. It's like carrying a personal bodyguard with you, in your purse or your pocket. Darkness brings danger. Muggers and rapists use darkness to their advantage. We all know what it's like to be walking at night and hear footsteps coming at us from behind. Who's there? If it's somebody bad, will you be protected? Your life may depend on it. My friend Katie's close call needs to be a wake-up call for all of us, myself included. Pick up a lipstick bodyguard and keep it with you always.
Lipstick Bodyguard, fear no evil. Get yours today, only at lipstickbodyguard.com.
Some people think being alone is a bad thing, that you're antisocial or unwanted. And of course, being alone all the time is no good. But for short periods, I think we as caregivers, you know, for our parents, we need to do that. You know, just take a day by yourself or a weekend. And you'll see that you'll start to feel good about being alone for short times, and that you're going to start to enjoy it. Because being alone, it allows you to recharge. When you're surrounded by people all the time, you don't realize how much energy you use trying to keep other people happy, you know, trying to figure out what they want, reading their emotions. It can be draining mentally. So a little alone time, it can give you a mental, an emotional break from the constant interaction with family, friends, your job, people. Being alone allows you to reflect more because, you know, that we lead such fast-paced lives. We don't have a chance to just sit and reflect for ourselves. You know, not spending time, we always are processing the feelings of other people in our relationships. We never turn, you know, inward and look at ourselves. So being quiet and in solitude, that's the perfect environment for reflection. We can get in touch with our own emotions. We don't do that when we're catering to other people. You know, we try to please everybody what they want. So sometimes, you know, we just want to sit back and think about what makes us happy, sad, you know, what makes us feel better, what do we want to do? So it lets us be in touch with ourselves. And you know what? If you're alone, you can do something that you enjoy, because life, you know, relationships, it's a compromise. And sometimes we want to do, you know, we try to do what everyone else wants. I'm famous for that. I don't tell people what I want. You know, I always, you know, say, oh, well, what do you want to do? What do you want to eat? You know, what? And I always put other people, you know, before me. That's just the way I am. And so then I really don't do what I want to do. So if you're alone, you know, you can do that. And you may just not want to do anything, but that's something you're going to enjoy. You'll be more productive, because sometimes with so many people around, you can't get anything done. So when you're by yourself, you don't have anyone distracting you. if I take a day, you know, just for myself, I tend to enjoy, you know, my relationships more when I'm back among people, because the time, you know, alone helps you appreciate yourself, and it helps you appreciate the other people in your life and your relationships with them. You can feel more independent by being alone. You won't feel anxious or that you have to have somebody around you all the time, or that you have to constantly be interacting with someone else. You know, I always remember me as a kid in the summer, I always just wanted to sit under a tree with a book and read. And my mother was always yelling at me, go play with the other kids, go play with the other kids, you know. And I would, but some days I just didn't want to do that. I just wanted to be by myself. But, you know, then I would think, oh my God, that's bad, you know. So, and maybe I wasn't as independent as I should have been, you know, growing up. I don't know. But, you know, when you're by yourself, then you'll feel okay when you look around and you only see you, and you'll feel more confident and more independent. And being alone with yourself, it'll give you a break from constantly trying to keep everyone happy, you know, because our life is full of relationships, and most relationships only last if the both people are content, you know, that they can live together, live among themselves. So relationships are hard, so they require work, and that's any kind of relationship, you know, husband, wife, mother, child, friend, any coworker. So it gives you a break if you're alone from constantly having to try to keep everyone happy. You only have to keep yourself happy when you only see yourself. And you don't have to apologize. A lot of times we do things or say things that upset other people. Sometimes, you know, we say things and we don't even realize we're hurting someone else's feelings. And so we're always apologizing. And you don't have to do that if you're by yourself. You don't have to second guess what to say or, you know, what to do for fear of offending someone. There's no pressure. And finally, you don't have to get the okay from anyone. You know, a lot in life, we feel like we have to get approval from family, friends, bosses, you know, coworkers. So when we're by ourselves, we're perfectly capable of acting on our own. And we don't have to, you know, ask anyone for any kind of answers. We always look to other people for answers. But when you're alone, you can trust your own instincts. I came across a very interesting piece of research. Why can pill organizers cause adverse effects among the elderly? And pill organizers, you know, those boxes where they give Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and the different times for medication to be taken, you put the pills in there. Of course, they help people take the right medication at the right time. So when an elderly person is using a pill organizer, they tend to take their medication properly. And if they've always used one, they take their medicine the right way. But what the study has found is that people who switch from taking their medication from, you know, the regular bottle or the regular packets to a pill organizer are more likely to have adverse effects from the medication. So what they found is people who had been taking their medication from its regular packaging, from the bottle, were taking their medication sporadically, so they weren't taking their medication properly. Then when they switch to a pill organizer, their medication is in there properly, and they started taking it properly, and then they weren't feeling well. So they would tell their doctor the medication isn't working. So the doctor increases the dosage to try to get the desired effect of the medication. So what was happening was now they're taking their medicine, they're taking too much of the prescribed medication than they ever did. So they're having the side effects of the medication. So, wow, that's kind of, I always, when I always am telling, you know, children of aging parents, you know, make sure your mom and dad, because there's so many, they'll call me and say, my mom isn't taking her medication right. You know, we found they're not taking their medicine. They're either taking too much, too little, not taking it, you know, not getting it refilled. So we always say, you know, we want to have a pill organizer in the home. But if your mom and dad are just starting, you know, to start to have to take medication or starting to have to take a lot of medication, set them up. You know, we want to set them up on a pill organizer immediately so that they start to take medication the right way in that, you know, pill organizer. We had, I had a client who, her mom had Parkinson's and AFib, and she was taking her medications not properly, you know, through just taking them out of the bottle when she, and come to find out, her daughter came to find out she got really sick and she passed out and then went in the hospital. And that's when I, you know, her daughter contacted me, and what was happening was she wasn't taking her medications properly. She was taking them sporadically. Sometimes she took them too many, sometimes she didn't take enough. And then of course that's what happened. And so then, you know, her daughter set up this pill organizer, and then she still wasn't feeling well because then she was taking the medications properly and the same thing happened. You know, the daughter called the doctor and said, these medications, you know, she's not, they're not working. And they did increase the dosages, and then she was still not feeling well, and come to find out that's exactly what was happening. So that's really a very interesting piece of research. So make sure to start out your mom and dad on a pill organizer. And then just make sure, you know, don't jump to the conclusion right away. I mean, speak to their doctor. If you think they were taking their medication sporadically, tell their doctor that. So that when they start out on a pill organizer and then they're taking them properly, you want to make sure that, you know, they're not, you don't call the doctor and say nothing's working yet. So always consult your physician. And now, my survival tip of the week. Play for 15 minutes. And play something you enjoy. And by play, it means, you know, if you want to ride a bicycle, if you want to play a game of cards, you want to play solitaire, you want to play Monopoly, you want to do something that you enjoy. Play like a kid for 15 minutes. And that's found to help reduce some stress. Well, I've run out of time. If this week's show was helpful to you, or you know someone who would be helped by it, please tell them. They can subscribe to the show using iTunes. You can find links to the topics we just talked about in the show notes for today's episode, episode 19, at parentsarehardtoraise.org. I'm here to help you, so please tell me if there's something you're struggling with, and I'll try my best to include it in a future show. You can reach me through my website, dianeberardi.com. You can follow me on Facebook at Parents Are Hard to Raise, and I tweet at Jersey Elder Care. Parents Are Hard to Raise is a Counterthink Media production. The music used in this broadcast was managed by Cosmo Music LLC, New York, New York, under license of Broadcast Music Incorporated. Thank you so much for listening. See you again next week.